PodNuts wants to thank everyone who supports the network by going to www.podnuts.com/Amazon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Geeksters episode 148. This is a show where we talk about all things computery. Yes, that's our new word for the day, computery. If it has a computer in it at one point, we're going to talk about it. If you're joining us live, you're not dreaming. You're not deceiving. You did not get in a DeLorean and go back in time. We have Fred with us tonight. Hey, Fred, how's it going?
Oh, it's going well. Thanks for having me back, guys. I hate to interrupt the trifecta of awesomeness,
No, it's okay. We'll just be square for a day. It's all right.
Oh, okay. So we'll just divide it by a multiple. Okay, yeah, something like that. No, it's great to be back, guys. I miss you guys and catch all the shows. And yeah, finally got a microphone set up where I could come back on. So here I am.
There you are. Well, I know last week we talked about having you on, and I didn't see your Voxer until very late. You're like, yes, I'm here. Hey, over here. Wave. Like, I could just imagine you jumping up and down, waving your arms. Pick me. And I didn't even see it till late, so I apologize
for that. That's all right. You guys did a great job. That was a great show last week, by the way.
Well, thanks. Thanks. It has nothing to do with me. I'm going to kick it. It all has to do with my wonderful co-hosts, Tim and Mitch. How's it going, guys?
Good. I'm glad to be a part of the superfecta of superiority.
Oh. Show title. Now you just got to figure out, how do you spell superfecta?
Like trifecta, but super instead of tri. Just the way it sounds.
Okay, how do you spell trifecta?
Never mind. It's on the internet.
To the Google.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Glad to be here with all my buddies and that guy on the end.
Me or Fred?
Fred. Guy all the way on that, all the way down there, that Fred guy. Remember Fred, so I don't know. I didn't know he was going to be on tonight. I was kind of surprised he got thrown into this, so I have to roll with it now, so I'll just grin. So,
yeah, he saw me and he was going to run, but you know, he was underneath his girlfriend, so he couldn't get away quick enough.
He let the jack down, the girlfriend fall on top of me. Oh, buddy, so yeah, I'm doing good. How about you, Mitch, man? Is it you having a heat wave out your way?
Not quite.
Yeah.
It's not too much different where you're at. And we're supposed to get really hit Friday. It's supposed to get an Arctic thing in here. No snow, just real cold. And I'm sick of it, you hear? Sick of it, I tell you. We had an ice storm this morning. I'm not too bad, just mainly in my driveway, or only where I walked.
Mainly where you walk.
Yeah.
It's like Winnie the Pooh and the little black rain cloud.
I didn't realize this. Instead of me killing myself, scraping the ice off the window, I could have let the car run for 5 minutes. It took me almost 60 years to figure that out.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Or a blow dryer with an extension cord.
Yeah.
You don't have a garage, Mitch.
Yeah, one car garage.
Oh, so yes. Your car's not in there.
No.
Well, there's your problem.
Nah. I just finally washed it Sunday. Went to the car wash, and then you can't tell today. So, oh well, such as
well. Life. It was 75 here today.
I don't want to hear about it. Okay, all right.
It was a little bit chilly.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, where's that?
We had to light a fire.
He's in Florida.
Yeah, I'm in Florida.
Oh, okay. Well, that's where you troublemakers belong.
Yeah,
hiding from the government, you just go to Florida.
We could really elaborate on that for a while, but I guess we better not.
So, guys, I didn't even introduce myself. I'm Martin Obando. There you go. Okay. It's Patch Tuesday. It comes around.
Oh, I know it is. Gosh, here it is.
It's back. Patch Tuesday.
Hey, I have to go for a minute. My computer wants to reboot. I'll be right back. No, just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for joining Geeksters, the shortest show ever. We're all going to reboot our computers. I think that's from... Oh, no, Fred's back. I thought maybe he did reboot his computer.
No, my mother came to tell me that my salad was ready. I told her, I said, I'm on a show.
Mom, can't you say I'm on a show?
I'm like a 40-year-old loser here.
Mom!
Damn, I'm like 50 years old. I live with my mom and dad, but it's fun.
Mom, I'm talking to my friends.
If you could see the video right now, Fred's on the top bunk and his feet are just swinging.
Fred, what is that you doing under the covers? Fred!
Oh, I'm watching Geeksters.
Oh, mercy. That was funny.
It's like we're in the High Linux Fest. again in person.
Yeah, I'll never forget Tim's 68 Mustang.
Yeah, well, we did that great slalom.
I'm looking for it, and all of a sudden you come right up to me. I said, what? And I fell for the whole thing.
Mustang.
But I tell you, that ride you gave me, it felt like I was in a Mustang.
Well, you know, hey, look. It just takes the right driver, and you feel young just for a moment.
And I after that, I wasn't constipated anymore either. So,
oh man, come on!
There's, oh wow!
Can we go back to talking about Fred living at home?
Yeah, please.
I'd almost rather talk about Patch Tuesday.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll continue on with Patch Tuesday. Yeah. I just wanted to mention 55 security vulnerabilities. 41 of them specifically apply to Internet Explorer.
All right.
So, yeah.
Nice.
Don't forget to update, and it sounds like it's going to take a while with 55 updates. I haven't updated any of my machines yet, so I couldn't tell you a length.
What a surprise.
But usually that means that this weekend I'll be doing updates on servers. So.
I do see where my machine is downloading updates as we speak. It's at 70%, so.
Well, let us know. We'll know when you reboot.
It might be banned a little bit.
Am I breaking up real bad? Is that what we're making?
No.
It's my updates.
He's mocking himself.
Hey, Martin, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Are you still using GFI? Or do you use GFI, correct?
I do. I still use GFI.
Little GFI news, for those who don't know, they have now changed their policy. If you are a minuscule user such as myself, you can no longer have an $11 a month account like I do. They have instituted a $50 a month minimum.
Hmm.
So, you know, obviously I'm not going to use it anymore because it's not worth it for me to spend $50. I don't know. It really was a kind of a letdown to me because, you know, I really enjoyed it, you know, for what I was using. I mean, I'm paying for it. It's my mom and my daughter and, you know, that kind of stuff. And, but yeah, they're doing away with it. They said it was, and I understand, they said it was too difficult to, you know, track down these, small accounts and, too time consuming, I guess, is how they worded it. But, so yeah, if you're a GFI user with less than $50 a month, you're done. unless you want to spend the $50.
Now, are you creating, because see, when talking to my rep from GFI, which is now called Logic now.
Yeah, they change their name every 15 minutes.
Well, the thing is that I can have as little as one computer on there. Did they?
Yeah, but it'll cost you $50.
So, okay.
If you have an account, I'm assuming your account is greater than $50 a month.
Oh, yes.
Then you wouldn't have received that email. The only people who received that email were people who have accounts less than $50 a month.
Okay, yeah, because I have I manage 122 computers with my GFI.
Yeah, they love you, Martin.
And I have.
Well, the thing is that I'm not complaining. I mean, I get it. I understand their logic behind it. It was just a little disappointing because it was a great service for a great price for what I was using it for. I mean, it's good for anybody, but you know, it was just disappointing to lose that.
Can you resell it out? I mean, that's an option to keep a hold of it.
Well, I can. I mean, if I was in that business, you know, but I'm not. So eventually I might get back there. You know, I'm going to be pursuing a more of a, I just accepted a new position in my day job. And I'm going to have to make up some money. So I think I will be starting to fix computers, or at least trying to, on a more cash or, you know, getting paid for it basis.
Right. Right. Yeah. So what I use is it's maxfocus.com/remote-management. And that's, I'm just looking at there to see what their prices are. And I haven't seen that yet. So no, I'm not saying I don't believe you. I'm just was curious to see.
Oh, fine. Don't believe me. I don't care.
No. I said I don't believe you. Oh my gosh.
No, I know. I'm just, I got an email. It's about a week and a half ago, I believe I got the email.
Yeah.
And, they haven't shut me off yet, but. I really didn't, I'm not too concerned because, again, it's nothing that I'm managing per se, so it's not a big deal for me. But just for those out there who, you know, have been using it or might know about it, I mean, just that's just a FYI. that there you can no longer have a minuscule account. You know, you're going to have at least a $50 minimum.
Got it.
I mean, I guess you can have a one computer account, but you're still going to have to pay the $50 minimum. That's the way I read it.
Right.
So
now we're using it for everything, the remote management, managing the software, you know, antivirus. And I mean, primarily I use it for the antivirus, but the, you know, patches and stuff come along with that.
No, all the machine, you know, I have what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 4 deployed, four or five, and whatever $11 comes out to. And and I had the full gamut, you know, TeamViewer and antivirus, the whole nine. You know, what's it, $2 per computer, I believe, is what it's capped at.
Yeah. I just deployed. So I took on a new customer this week, surprise, and they have two servers, 16 workstations. It's a nonprofit, and one of the computers had a whole bunch of viruses. That was kind of what they called me in for. A whole bunch of viruses on it. Used my Screen Connect tools to connect into it. Then ran JRT, cleaned up some stuff. Ran ADW Cleaner, and the new updates to ADW Cleaner makes my Screen Connect look as if it's a virus. It marks it into the folders, and I didn't notice that. And then I ran ADW Cleaner and killed my session.
Yeah, you know, I've done the same thing.
So I was like, oh, so I had to go back. You know, this was on a Friday. I had to wait and go back. Luckily, I caught it. I caught it because the second user from another location, I noticed it. So luckily, I was able to get into there on site and add it. But I was back on site doing this other one. But, you know, just ran a test. Ran JRT, ran ADW Cleaner, ran Security Essentials, and then uninstalled all of that. I used my D7 tool for the JRT and ADW, so then that all came out. And then uninstalled Security Essentials, installed my GFI, let the antivirus do its thing, and then ran a full scan last night and found 9 more items, like Conduit Search Bar and my web search. And so it just, I've been so pleased with it, because as soon as I think the computer's clean, this will find more. And I know that every product's different and it scans differently, but I've been very pleased with it.
Yeah, absolutely. I did that exact same thing, though. I ran ADW, and I was on a remote session, and
yeah. So. Yeah, I am looking at, I need to add more stuff to it, so I've been looking at things like the, what is it? Kind of their ticketing system, like their service desk within GFI, because I need to start doing that, start getting a little bit more, I kind of get out of the ticketing system I'm currently using and maybe into something a little more manageable. That way, when I grow, it's just an easier step. It's kind of the next step forward.
Yeah, I think it's smart to incorporate, you know, everything into one dashboard, if you will, you know, one product. Is, you know, I know a lot of people I've heard, you know, they might have, you know, GFI for some stuff, and then they might use, what's a SOS for backup, and then something else from some other solution. And I don't know. To me, it just sounds complicated. I think it's better if you have everything under one umbrella, but what do I know? I don't do it.
Well, I mean, I can see the plus of having everything under one umbrella, but then again, there's also a negative on having everything under one umbrella. You know, I haven't used any of the backup.
Breaks, you get right. What?
The umbrella has a hole in it.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. That's very true.
So I don't good know. Point. But I just need to go with something with the ticketing system. That's kind of on my definitely on my to-do list. Move on to something ticketing system, because I have to hire somebody. I keep saying it. I have to do it. Anyways, I have another appointment with a new prospective client on Thursday. So
yeah, you need to hire somebody for sure.
Hey, Martin, real quick, again, I want to, since I'm here, and I want to, you know, I'm very grateful that you and your daughter were okay in that car wreck. I heard your story.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you very much for that. I'm still driving a rental van. The auditor hasn't,
you know what? I wanted to mention something about that. I rented a van when I came down to Florida here. This was in, late November. I rented a van to come from West Virginia down to Florida, and it was a really nice one of these, what do you call it, like Town and Countries or something like that.
Yeah.
And let me tell you something. I drove that thing, what was that, over 1,000 miles, and I was in love with the thing when I got here. It was great on the interstate, had lots of room in the back. had all the fancy whiz bang boom stuff. You know, I was sold.
I'm surprised I don't like it. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. It just feels like it's just, I mean, it has, the other day, Sunday, my daughter said, yeah, I want to go with you. So she jumped in the car. She's like, out of her purse, she pulls out Peter Pan now. And so we threw Peter Pan in the DVD player. And she's like, look back here. There are four DVD screens in the back of that van. And they
shouldn't have that.
But the thing is you have one, and then an inch later, another one will fold down. Like, I don't know why they need to be that, is it you can't see one, and then all of a sudden you need one that's 3 inches closer, and if that one doesn't work, you can go to another one that's 2 inches closer?
Five-year-olds don't share.
But they're on top of each other. It's not like they're dual side-by-side. They're in front of each other, like an inch apart, inch and a half apart. So I can't see. Could you give me the one that's 2 inches closer? Oh, there you go. Much better. It's almost like I'm there now.
Why have anything? Why have seatbelts? Seatbelts. This is stupid. We didn't have seatbelts when I was a kid. We just laid on the floor over the hump. Just these kids today, they just have all this crap.
You know, it's funny you mention that because, like, if I'm on an airplane, and they have a screen in front of me, right? It's like 3 inches in front of your face. If I'm watching a movie on an airliner, I end up watching the screen on the people in front of me. You know, because it's so close on mine, you know, it's too close.
Now, is that when you're driving? Is that or is that just when you're just sitting in the back?
No, flying. I'm in the back. Yeah,
I just watch the person in front of me. How many people are there up there? No wonder we can never take off on time.
That's right. I got to finish my movie.
That's it. All those times you've been like delayed, and the plane won't, you know, have maintenance. They're up front, like trying to get the scratches out of the DVD that the pilots are gonna watch during the flight.
Right. It's a mechanical failure.
They knock on the door. We say, "Peter Pan's not done yet."
That's right.
Oh, sorry, I hijacked. Go ahead.
No. So what else have you been up to?
What else have I been up to? Well, I've been.
So you're still a pilot, right?
I'm still a pilot. They could never. It's like being a Marine. They can never take it away from you.
I bet they can.
As I say, you can.
I dare you to challenge that.
But my stories will go with me.
There you go. They can take it away one time.
But no, you know, I've I got this. I got a buddy of mine. I work on his computers. Let's call him Ched.
Ched. And,
Ched.
Ched
has a bad habit, and that habit is that he likes to go to bed with his laptop open on his nightstand, like, you know,
yeah,
with watching Netflix. You know, like Mitch goes to bed listening to podcasts. Well, Ched goes to bed with Netflix playing.
Yeah, you know? Okay.
Well, Ched also occasionally might have some kind of a beverage in a cup as he's laying there. And it does happen on occasion where he flops around in the night and that cup gets spilt.
Oh, my gosh.
So, poor as you can imagine, it might occasionally end up where that cup with the beverage, said beverage, goes into the laptop. So,
now,
of course, Ched brings...
That's not good.
No. So, Ched brings me his computers every time this happens, and I got to work on them.
And you're real close to this Ched person.
Yeah, I'm very close to Ched. He's a very, very good friend. He's kind of fat and ugly, though, but I'm still friends with him anyway.
He's a pilot. However, he's a pilot, too, isn't he?
Yeah, Mitch, he is a pilot.
I thought so. Okay.
So anyway, I recently got one of Ched's computers that he spilt on, and what it would he woke up in the morning, and there was no evidence that the liquid was spilt onto the computer on the keyboard. So, you know, he was very stupid and went ahead and tried to boot it up, you know, anyway. And he did, and it would come up, and it would get to, like, the Windows screen, and it would just shut off. I mean, just completely turn off.
Yeah.
So he gave it to me, and I took it apart and pulled the motherboard out and did the old, you know, what do you call it, the rubbing alcohol with the toothbrush.
Yeah.
And put it all back together, and lo and behold, it worked.
Wow.
Booted That's right good. Up, and... So now the only thing that I got to do for Ched's laptop is get a new keyboard, because if you hit any of the number keys, it gives you the number, but it gives you about four digits after that. So So that like was one of my
numeric digits.
Anyway, it depends on the button you push.
Oh, so you hit two, and it puts two, and it puts like a string of twos?
No, it'll put, you hit two, and it'll put like OX9Z4.
Does it do that with an external keyboard?
Is that his password?
No, it does not.
All right, that's pretty good then.
Yeah. No, it's just the top portion of the keyboard has been corrupted with said liquid.
Yeah, well, it might still have liquid in it.
Well, I did a pretty good job cleaning it out. It could be.
Yeah. I'm just thinking that, like, even that cable, I mean, I imagine that wide ribbon cable, I mean, that's, you know, it's like a plastic encased thing. Just a little bit of, like, just not even liquid, just moisture in there.
Put it in the oven.
Well, when I first, that's interesting you said that, Tim. When I first put it back together, the keyboard didn't work at all. So I was like, ugh. So I pulled the key. Fortunately, on this particular, it's a HP something. The keyboard just pops right out. It's very simple. You don't have to do anything. It just pops out. And I looked at that ribbon cable, and sure enough, it was covered in goo. You know, so I took the.
What was the beverage?
I don't know.
Water, or was it like a chocolate milk or something? You know,
Chad didn't share that information with me.
Okay, I mean, if it was like a White Russian or something, that's a far different thing than either just a straight drinking a little bit of water. Chad can't afford White
Russians. Uncle Al in the chat room wants to know if the sticky keys are on.
No, that's funny though. Mm. I use my little trusty rubbing alcohol and toothbrush on that ribbon cable, Tim, and cleaned it all up and plugged it back in, and then it worked, other than the fact that you get the ghost characters on the number keys.
Yeah, okay.
So I just got to order that keyboard, and all will be well with Ched's world.
Well, that's good. Those keyboards usually aren't terribly expensive.
No, probably $15 or something.
Yeah, like yeah, yeah. You know what? A lot of times I find myself replacing those about halfway through the service life anyway, because people pop off keys or they get all kind of gunk in there. It's like, you know what? You know, I can throw it in there cheap enough. You know, what little bit it cost me to put that in there, it make your life that much better. It's usually a pretty easy sell.
I do have a question though regarding, because since I don't do a lot of that, the break fix type stuff, when you have the alcohol, rubbing alcohol, and you are cleaning up, there's two different types of rubbing alcohol. There's the regular one, the acetone, and then a non-acetone. Is there a preference because of dealing with plastics or anything like that?
That's a darn good question, Martin.
You want the strong stuff, and I'm trying to remember.
I don't know the answer. I just use isopropyl, whatever, you know, isopropyl.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I know that because I was doing some stuff with another device that's not a computer, and I had to get non-acetone because it didn't want to melt any of the plastic or anything like that that it was on. And so I wasn't sure if...
I don't believe that just regular rubbing alcohol that you buy at, you know, the pharmacy would melt plastic. I've never seen it do it, and I've used it on a lot of plastic.
Okay.
I don't know. Don't quote me. I don't know the right answer, but I've never seen it happen.
Because you usually have to get, if you're looking for non-acetone, you have to specifically say non-acetone. So I'm not sure if that just means, you know, if you just go to the store and grab one, usually that has acetone in it.
That's a good, yeah,
or the other way around. I'd have to go get some.
I don't believe it does. I don't believe it has acetone. I don't know.
Okay, it was just a question. So if somebody knows, that maybe.
Yeah.
What about
someone in the chat room knows?
What about the throw it in Purell thing? Did you do that? Purell? Remember that?
You know, I've
remember
heard of people doing that.
I heard somebody doing
it.
Yeah,
we know it real good. It worked for him.
I don't think it hurts anything. I think you can use it.
Take it off right away, probably not. I don't know. What do I know?
It's just a little bit more gooey. That's only the thing I like about the rubbing alcohol is it dries right away. You know?
But is Purell water based? Doesn't have water in it? I don't know.
David says nail polish remover.
Exactly. Well, yeah, that's
it's actually I've used that.
Well, that's what I get. Maybe.
Yeah, but maybe you use it on your nails.
You know what? That is what I'm talking about. Nail polish remover with acetone and non-acetone.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You're right because I was actually trying to remove some nail polish.
From your toes?
We'll say yes.
You know what? The only thing I'm seeing here about acetone in relation to isopropyl alcohol is that
You know, I was thinking of nail polish remover, not
okay.
Isopropyl alcohol. Yeah, so that is the your. Thank you, David, for clearing that up. I was getting my because this project I used isopropyl alcohol to clean it, some nail polish, and then non-acetone nail polish or some isopropyl alcohol to clean it, nail polish, you know, white, and then non-acetone nail polish remover so I could remove some of the nail polish but not all of it and not burn anything.
The hair off your toes.
The hair off my hobbit feet.
And Uncle Al in chat, no, just because I live in West Virginia doesn't mean I distill my own alcohol.
It also means that he could distill his own alcohol. He didn't say no. He just said, just because I live here doesn't mean I don't.
That's right. Oh, moving on.
Moving on. So
I did. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. No, I'm just going to say I had another laptop I worked on. It was kind of a story of.
Sorry.
Again, this was Chad's computer. Another one of Chad's computers.
Poor Chad.
And you know how when you go, I don't know about you guys, Mitch and Tim, I know Martin, you don't do a lot of it, but
well,
when
I go to tear apart
a laptop, I'll try to go find a video on it or something, and unless it's one I'm really familiar with, and just kind of see where the gotchas are at. And this particular one, I thought, I'll just rip into this thing. And so I rip into it, and I got the top cover or the palm rest, right? So I got it all off, had the keyboard out, pulled the palm rest out. Well, the problem was when you lift it up on this pump, at the top left is where the power button is.
Okay.
And that power button has a power on cable that runs to the motherboard. Mm-hmm. So when you lift up on that palm rest, you have to pull it towards you so that you don't break that cable.
It almost have to like slide it toward you.
You have to slide it towards yourself. Yeah. Exactly. And many of them you can just kind of lift up, like up and away from you. Well, which is what I did. Well, unfortunately, there's absolutely zero tolerance on that power on cable. And
it was a power off cable when you were done with it.
It pulled, excuse me, it pulled right out of the little, it's got like a little daughterboard, I guess you'd call it, you know, that the power button pushes on.
Yeah.
So I went online and I couldn't find a thing to save my life. And finally, I called. It was very nice. By the way, I'll give them a plug because they were great. It was Spare Parts Warehouse, I believe it's called. If you look them up online, I think it's what it's called. For laptop Spare Part Warehouse, I believe. So I called them up. Excuse me. And I told him what it was, and I gave him the model number. And he was offline for, he put me on hold for about 5 minutes. And he comes back and he goes, yeah, we can't get that part, but here's the part number that you need. Because the part number actually wasn't on the board.
Really?
And yeah, so he gave me the number. I Googled it and came up at like $90 on Amazon. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Because you weren't the first person to have done this.
Yeah. So I went to like page 3 of the Google search in desperation, and sure enough, I found some little place in Miami had it for $15, and I said, well, I'll give it a shot. And it was pretty expensive shipping. I think they charged like $9. But sure enough, it was used. It was a grade A, they called it, and 2 days later, it showed up in the mail. Put it on. Fired right up, perfect. Job's done.
Beautiful.
I was really happy with that. So I guess the moral of that story is if keep going past page 1 if the part's too expensive.
Well, and you know what? I mean, the thing is that a lot of times, I guess I've torn apart so many of them, and you know what? A lot of them anymore, that it's not like tearing apart laptops used to be. They're fair. I mean, they're about as standardized as ever gonna get. I mean, you turn it over, all the screws are roughly the same size and shape. You know, they're all in about the same place. All the models, doesn't matter the manufacturer, it all kind of looks very similar. So you do a lot of them, you don't think anything of just kind of tearing into it. And that stupid little cable, that's the one part of the video I'd probably miss anyway, because I'm usually only half paying attention to those things on the rare occasion I'm watching them, so I probably would have ripped the thing in half anyway.
Yeah, I had a friend call me and say, hey, I need you to come listen to my laptop. So I went over there, and he turned it on, and it made this horrid noise, just a spinning, grinding noise, and so we quickly turn it off. What it is I think the one of the blades in the heatsink was broken.
Yeah.
And so I brought it home because I can pull the hard drive. Pulled the hard drive, was able to pull the data off it, and then started to look at how much it would cost to take down the, you know, well, first off, how much would it cost for me to rip apart the laptop and then put a new heatsink on? And it was going to be a bit of money because the part wasn't too bad, but the time, because I had to completely field strip it. So he's not going to do that. But I always have to look up videos too. I've never, I'm always, because everything's just a little bit different.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. Well, I had, I can't remember last time I was on, but I had, I'm sure I told the story of, I know I did, breaking my daughter's iPad. and then I went to fix it and broke it more.
It's an education.
Man, you told me Chad did that. Oh, never mind. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that was definitely Fred did that one.
Okay.
Chad.
Chad wasn't involved.
Chad sleeps
well. Just recently, and by recently I mean in November, so I know I wasn't on the show since then. She had another iPad, like, so both iPad 2s, and she dropped it. And when she did, it jarred the LCD screen itself to where it will just like glowed red. And of course, she got a new one right away because she's like that. And so I had these. I came down here to Florida. I had these two broken iPads.
Did you spank it back into shape?
I did try that.
Did you? Okay. All right.
It was unfortunately didn't work.
Okay. That is a legitimate fix, folks.
No.
I had one come. It had a really weird red tint, and I kind of looked down. I'm like, oh. I searched that up a little bit, and everybody's like, just spank it, son of a gun. I spanked that thing, you know, for about 5 minutes, and it came right back. And that was a year and a half ago. I haven't heard from those people since.
Yeah, no, I know you're not kidding. I heard the same thing, and I'm wondering if it's because the ribbon cable that plugs in gets loose.
That's exactly what happens.
Jar it around, it wiggles it back in a little bit.
Yeah. Yep.
So I was sitting here one day, and I'm thinking of my stuff. So I've got this one iPad that I completely mangled, you know, trying to take the lid off, and because I didn't know what I was doing. But after, of course, I mangled it, I know where all the cables or where all the ribbon cables are now.
Sure.
And it's got a good LCD in it. And I thought, why not just take the screen off of this one and pull the LCD out of the other one and put it into the new one?
Oh,
there you go. So I cannot believe how easy this was. I sat here at the kitchen table with a hair dryer. Just heated up the screen corners, took a little spudger and just started going around. Well, I started at the top right, and of course, when you get to the camera at the top, you want to hold up so that you don't hit that, and then you come your way around. And when you hit the bottom of it, where the power on mute or the home button is, again, you want to hold pressure up and get lots of heat. Slide it across, went around up to where the power on mute button is on the right top, which is what I completely mangled the first time.
Oh, yeah.
And did the same thing, just held up, kept heat. And let me tell you something. Within 3 minutes, maybe 4 minutes, I had that the screen off or the cover off.
The digitizer.
And the digitizer, thank you. And then I pulled I already had the LCD out of the other one because it was already open. And I pulled the LCD, which is four screws. And a ribbon cable, pulled it out, put the other one in, four screws. And you know what? I didn't even put new glue, you know, because it's just for me anyway. I just used the same glue, just stuck it right back down. And on the bottom left, the only deficiency on the bottom left, it kind of pops up just a very little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, for me, I don't care. It works fine. And hey, there you go. I got an iPad.
Fantastic. So, I love taking parts and making something out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I was thrilled to death because I had two devices that I thought were toast, and you know, I got an iPad out of the deal. So
that's fantastic. And I think you really outlined the secret to the iPads is that, you know, if experience is priceless, but honestly, you know, it's all about just getting enough heat into it to loosen that adhesive and just working as slowly as you can. You know, it's if you're extremely...
Well, it's not even, you don't need much heat. That's the clincher, is that You don't need a lot of heat. Like I said, well,
you're in Florida. You don't need much heat down there.
Yeah, you just hold it outside, and you know, you bring it in, and you know, pretty much just falls apart.
Just leave it on the dash for about 20 minutes.
You know what? That would work. Be honest.
Actually, that would work pretty well. You're right. That really would. But,
so anyway, those have been kind of my stories of late. Sorry to.
Oh, that's fantastic. No,
sorry,
you know,
to hog the mic.
You know what?
All I want to do is talk. You can't stop me now.
That's success, man. It's just like those are great stories. They all ended well.
Yeah. Well, the unfortunate thing was 2 days. I needed a tablet. Well, at least I thought I did. And I found my Nexus 7. 7. Mm-hmm. I left it behind like a year ago somewhere. And I saw they had a Nexus 7, the second generation, at Office Max, the demo model. And I got them down to $95, I think it was.
Yeah, they don't make them anymore.
I bought it.
Nice.
My wife still uses hers religiously. I mean, the only time she's on a laptop is to pay bills or whatever. But she's on it all the time. And by the way, she finally did get I don't know if I mentioned it here last week. My wife finally got a smartphone.
Oh,
yeah. A lower end one from Boost Mobile. I mean, she did it without me. I mean, I didn't know anything about it, but I probably would have got a little better phone, but it actually works pretty good. It's a LG Realm, but it only has 4 gigabytes of space on it. I mean, and usable space is only like less than a gigabyte.
Yeah.
So I moved everything I could that could go into the SD. I had to put an SD card in there. I said, you'll just have to watch it and make sure she's got Voxer. That's all she needs. And it's working good for her right now. So.
Nice. That's great.
I think most people, that's all they, tablet's all they really need.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're just a content consumer,
right,
you know, you really don't need it.
Yes, I'm not. I mean, I don't mess around too many apps at all.
I ended up doing that to my tablet. I was kind of thinking about that, and it was actually kind of, it was brought on by Nightwise did a podcast called Cyber Zen, and one of the things he talks about is kind of just... getting rid of things you don't use on your phones and on your tablets. So I realized that I had used my phone more for interacting with everything, but my tablet, which I loaded up a lot of my stuff, like my podcasts and a whole bunch of other stuff. And then I realized all I was doing was never really doing stuff with it, but actually pulling stuff down. I wasn't listening to my podcasts on it, and I was constantly running out of room. So I got rid of all of that stuff, got rid of Facebook, got rid of Google+, got rid of all of that stuff on my tablet, and now it's just become my little media center type thing. And actually, it works out much better. It runs a lot smoother now. I kind of did the same thing where I just kind of made it a consuming type device rather than an interactive type device. I think it's a first generation. Maybe it's a second. I bought it from Adam Hammett. Do you guys remember?
Yeah.
Adam?
Yep.
I bought it from him a while ago, and it still works. Chugs along. Does what I need to do.
Very good.
Very good.
I did have a computer come into me. Last week was asked if I can come take a look at a Windows 8 computer, and all it did was when you logged in, it went to a black screen. And I thought, okay, this is a, you know, SpinRite. We'll take SpinRite. SpinRite didn't find anything at it.
I had the same thing.
Did you? Yeah. So I couldn't get past the password. They finally gave me the right password. So I would log in. I realized I could move the mouse around, but I couldn't see anything. You hit Control-Alt-Delete, and I was prompted with, you know, reboot, log off, yep. Task Manager, hit Task Manager, and all of a sudden everything was there. So I started looking online, but I could never get into safe mode. I couldn't. I would hit Shift, to hold down Shift, and hit F8. It wouldn't do anything. Hold down F8. It never wouldn't get into safe mode. So, but I could get to a command line once I was in the machine through Task Manager. I could actually restart Explorer.exe and then shut down Explorer.exe and then restart it, and things worked better. So I could get to a task, I could get to a command prompt, and there is a couple lines you can run. You have to drop out to command prompt and run a couple lines. You basically sit. You basically put the you. Let me pull up the webpage real quick. Let me put the link in the chat. You go into what's called the BCD edit, and you change the startup mode from minimal or normal to safe mode, and then reboot, and it forces it to go into safe mode. Now, the trick was that I thought I wasn't doing it right because it never actually went into safe mode. Like on Windows 7, it'll prompt tell you, hey, you're in safe mode on all four edges during the login, but if you log in, then it kicks you into safe mode on Windows 8, at least on this machine. So I was able to get into Windows 8, and it found out that it was spyware, malware, and then I removed the video drivers. And I don't know if that was the same issue you had, Tim, but they were saying that possibly video drivers. So I removed the video drivers, rebooted it. It took a little bit of scanning and tweaking with it, but I was able to get it back up and running without messing too much with it.
Yes, it was malware. And I'll tell you what, it was super easy to remove. The difference is that this machine had a second user account that I could log into. That was it was not so infected that I couldn't load up some malware bytes and run it. So that I think that right there, wow, if you take anything away from this show, it's that, is that whenever I set up a machine for somebody, I always set up a second user account. You know, every machine that comes in here and I work on it, I set up a second user account. That's always an administrator account. And so, you know, it's got username, it's got a password. I always put a text file in my notes on the machine. You know, what that password is, I show the people. I say, look, there's a new account here. There's nothing hidden there. If you feel like you have to get in there, here's the password. But, you know, this is going to make my life easier. Next time I work on it, it's going to make your bill smaller. And if you never log into it, that would be best. But that if this machine ever becomes really corrupted and really infected, I can usually log into a second user account and clean it up from there. If there's only the single broken user account, we've got major problems, and it really complicates the job. And that was the case with this. It had this was a machine that somebody had bought. And they brought it to me, and they had a second user account for somebody else, and it was golden. I could log into it, and I could load up web pages. I could install malware bytes, and get it running well enough that boom, reboot, brought it back into the broken account, and log in no problem. I ran ADW, boom, reboot, it was clean, man, and installed all the updates. It had a previous the difference was it had a previous infection that had set a proxy in Internet Explorer settings, and so this thing would not it would load some sites fine. It could not load other sites, which was kind of strange. But it couldn't go to the store. It couldn't go to the Microsoft store, so it couldn't download.
Nobody wants to go there.
Well, kicking and screaming, it couldn't go. So it was unable to download it was supposed to start this, you know, program that you needed. It said, well, I can't start. I need an update. So you go get the update. Well, it can't contact the store. So I did manually. I went in and found that proxy. And I said, well, there we go. And that fixed everything. Man, we got the updates. That thing was humming when it left here. So that's very interesting, because you gave a really great explanation of how you solved that. But, wow, that was a lot of extra work.
Well, I didn't think about the second. I mean, it only had one.
Yeah, that's the thing. I had the one account.
And so I didn't even think about a second account. I just thought, I realized that it's not broken, because if it goes to a black screen, I was like, well, is it a bad hard drive? Is there something sure. bigger going on?
Sure.
But once I was able to get in, control, delete, and go, oh, all right, I see the problem now.
Yeah.
Then I had to kick it back into, I think the toughest thing was that I tried so long to try to get it into safe mode, just trying and trying and trying, before I found drop out to command line, run these commands, safe mode, and then go back in the command line, remove the commands, and then reboot again, and you're out of safe mode. So
was that Brian's, did you find out on Brian's side he has the same thing on there?
No.
I think, okay.
I don't go, I always forget about Brian's stuff.
Yeah, he did one on there. But Windows 8.1 is a little different than 8. It is harder to get into safe mode, yeah. But what kind of machine was it?
This was a Toshiba
8.1. They should have a recovery partition where it should let you do the same thing.
Well, that's the thing. That's everything I was reading was go into the recovery partition, go into like tools and then setup, and then you'd say reboot in safe mode. There wasn't that option.
Right, okay.
So I did get a chance during fixing this whole computer, though. I did get a chance to watch a movie. So that was, but
Peter Pan. Were you sitting in that van?
I may have been sitting in the van. I won't divulge.
Silently enjoying yourself. Oh, brother.
So I mentioned Nightwise just a minute ago, and I listened to another one of his podcasts called Life on a Chromebook. I don't know have you guys ever listened to Nightwise?
Oh, yeah.
It's been a while.
Is he from the Netherlands, I believe?
Yeah. And so what he did is he actually spent, he got a Chromebook and spent a week on it. He took it to work. He did everything he needed to do on a Chromebook, and he has. There's a video on it, but then you can also just listen to the audio podcast. But he talks about hardware or software that he put on it to connect to your own home proxy. He talks about dual booting it with Linux. He talks about what to do at work if you're on an Active Directory. Maybe he talked about that part. Anyways, it's just I was pretty amazed at what he was able to do with just plugins from the Chrome Store to use his laptop in a corporate environment.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure you guys know Jeff Jarvis on This Week in Google.
Uh-huh.
He's been living on a Chromebook for a year.
Yeah?
Yeah, and it's exactly what he does. He uses Linux, dual boot Linux, to use Skype to do the show. Although, because it's Linux, it really doesn't work all that well. So he's actually going to get another machine to use for the show. Because as somebody once said, Linux is great if your time is worth nothing.
Who said that?
Jeff?
No, I'm just busting Martin's bubble.
I know. Oh, I know. Hey, it's not my fault. Actually, it's not my fault. You have to use it for your operating system.
Now, there was Kerry Holzman actually uses that line, and when people ask him about Linux and his speeches that he does, but that's not his quote. He actually quoted it from another guy who was actually a Linux guy. I can't remember the name, but if you Google it, you'll probably find it. But anyway, I thought that was kind of funny.
It sounds like David says his life is on a Chromebook too.
Really? He's being sarcastic.
Oh, is he?
Yes, I know him quite well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's.
But you know, my son has a Chromebook, and he actually does quite a bit of stuff with it. He doesn't need to do as much as Nightwise did, but he uses it for school. He writes all of his documents on it. He writes all of his presentations on it. That's where he spends all of his time on Chromebook. He can watch Netflix and he can watch Hulu. He can do, it can be used as a consumer product as well as it can be used as a...
When you're saving documents, it just goes in your Google Drive.
Right, Google Drive. Okay. And we're actually looking at the school that I'm at is going to do... We've been kind of playing with a one-to-one situation. Are we going to use tablets? What are we going to use? I think we're going to go with Chromebooks. And so we're going to go to a one-to-one with Chromebooks. So we're starting to really look at that. And one of the thoughts was, because they're going to be moving to reading some of the textbooks, do we do a tablet or do we do a Chromebook? And I was kind of hesitant at first thinking, well, tablet is much easier, is going to be a much easier platform to read a textbook on. But we're also asking them to do their documents and stuff like that. So now they can take all their documents and they can take their Chromebook home with them and continue on with their documents and stuff like that. And in a corporate environment, you can apply policies to the Chromebook even when it's off-site. So even if when the students take their laptops home, there's still policies for who they can email and who they can't email. Content filtering, we're still going to, there has to be some, there's got to be some, responsibility on their own for that, but we're going to be able to do as much as we possibly can. I may be able to harden down the Chromebooks to use, something like OpenDNS, force it through OpenDNS all the time. But we're gonna try to see what to do with that. And David, as far as what the schools do for authentication, it's just local authentication, or they authenticate against the Google platform. There's laptops there it's on a domain, but the Google book, the Chromebooks are not on a domain, but they do authenticate against the enterprise Google in the sky. That makes sense.
I like that Google in the sky.
Yeah, if I can make one suggestion, don't hack the cameras and do creepy stuff when they take them home.
No.
I'm against that.
Well, yeah, I'm against that.
Okay. Well, I just,
You just had to say it.
Microsoft's not.
Well, I just want to put that out there.
That's a good thing to be against.
Well, some say I protest too much. I'm not for it. I'm against it.
I'd be against it, too.
Okay, good. Mitch isn't weighing in, but...
I don't know Mitch what a Chromebook is. No, I'm only kidding.
It's none of your eight computers.
I don't have eight computers.
Oh, gosh.
I got four down here and three upstairs.
I know. I was talking to Mitch the other day. He's like, hey, look at this new computer I'm thinking about getting for upstairs. And he goes, during the conversation, he goes... Yeah, well, I got four downstairs. I'm thinking you can't just bring one of those.
Because I used to use three for podcasts when we did, especially when we did on Bootables. But I'm only using two now, so I don't need to have three. But and I could bring one upstairs. But I like new and shiny things. Or I was just going to get David. I was going to give money for David to get me these parts because he just put a beast of a machine together. I mean, really high end machine. And I was going to ask him to put one together for me. I would give him the money, but eh.
Meh. So we use, we've talked about BitTorrent Sync a couple times, and one of the things I wanted to mention is that, well, okay, I came across this website, and it's called How to Transfer Files from Your Computer to Your Smartphone, which I was like, okay, well, that's, you know, okay, that's pretty easy to do, but it actually, what it talks about using BitTorrent Sync to do that, and while you can do that, what I was more interested in this BitTorrent Sync was there's actually a video and then step-by-step instructions on how to use BitTorrent Sync in general. So if you've heard us talk about BitTorrent Sync, because that's how we share documents and data here, and you've never used it or are interested in about it, even though this is all about transferring data from your computer to your smartphone, it still has a video and still has step-by-step instructions to use BitTorrent Sync. So I wanted to put that in there to have you guys, you know, if anybody's interested in that, to check it out.
Awesome program.
Yeah.
It's very clever. Yeah.
And it seems like it's pretty hard to use, but once you do it, it doesn't, I mean, that's it. You kind of set it and forget it.
It seems like this recent update, it's like faster unless it's just me. Just because when I'm finished editing the file or cutting it up and putting it in there, just like 3 minutes, 5 minutes, it's up there. I'm done.
Wow. Well, I know our file's not very big either.
No, yeah. No. But it took longer. It seemed like it took longer. You know what I'm thinking of when we did it each.
Oh, yeah.
That's when y'all, that's what it was. Y'all send it to me. That's right. Work my hands off. Yeah, okay.
So we had received two emails. The first email is, we received another email about Pixie booting, which I thought was interesting. So people, this must have hit, you know, people are interested in this. What was that, Tim? You
had I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. Sorry. So you did.
Go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, Tim thinks you're talking about a ponytail or something. I don't know, but go ahead.
All right. This one is from Richard Stevens. And he says, hi, folks. I thought I might mention some freeware live CD-DVD tools that can implement or that can complement the Pixie boot tools mentioned before or used by themselves if needed. They're all for the Windows platform. The first one is XBoot, there'll be a link in the show notes, which allows user to combine multiple live ISO images into one single live ISO image in a way that you can use it to create your very own ultimate boot disk. You can add just about any bootable ISO image, and most should be recognized by XBoot. And if not, you can choose how the image should run. It also supports floppy images, which are the .img. You can also create a bootable USB with XBoot, but I have been unable to update the bootable USB created with XBoot without deleting all the previous XBoot created files first. The main issue I have with the XBoot is that it's apparently no longer being developed by the developer as the developer passed away, but it's still very useful and very easy to use. So that's cool. You can create your own Ultimate Boot CDs.
Sweet.
Yeah, XBoot's awesome. Brian over at BrightTech09 on YouTube, he's done quite a few videos on using XBoot to create those. And I've done it too. It's simple, easy peasy, great program.
You know it's Linux, right?
Oh, yeah, I've never used it before.
All right. The second part of his email says, the second tool I want to mention is MOBA Live CD. This tool allows you to test bootable images without needing to install and run full-featured virtual machines like VirtualBox or VMware. You just run the program and load the bootable image, and it will run the image within its own something virtual machine instance without any configuration needed. As a bonus, you can also test any bootable USB drives as well. I should mention that I personally don't test very large bootable images, 1 gig or above, as they may load rather slowly. The last tool I want to mention it's called Plop Boot Manager, PLOP.
That is awesome.
This tool allows a PC to boot from a variety of sources, even if there is no native support for them in the BIOS. For example, you can boot from a CD or DVD or even a USB if the PC's BIOS doesn't support it. This can be very useful for older PCs which don't have such boot options. You can use the Plop Boot Manager in a variety of ways, including add it to your boot manager, putting it in a bootable CD, DVD, USB, or via network. Via Pixie Boot. It has more features than mentioned here, and then he gives a URL, and it even works in Linux. So That's an email from Richard, and all of those links will be in the show notes.
That plop. The name's ridiculous, but that's an amazing toy. I don't know if the probably not as valuable anymore, but you know, I remember a few years ago loading up XP on going back to laptops with the floppy drive, so terrible. But it had the floppy, and you just had like a CD-ROM drive, and so like, well, I got this XP, it's on a DVD, and well, you couldn't run it, obviously, from the optical drive is installed, and there was no option to boot it from an external. I had an external DVD drive you couldn't do that. So I actually had a plop floppy. Man.
That sounded better in your head.
Wait a minute. You had a plop floppy?
Until I went to the doctor. I had a floppy disk.
Was it the virus doctor?
With the plop software installed on it. But it was great. I mean, it would boot from the floppy. It had all these terrible, stupid animations, but one of the options, bam, USB, and so yeah, I want to boot from the USB. It would find that DVD drive, yeah. Bam, off the races. And I mean, when I discovered that, it really made my life a lot easier. And so, like I said, I don't know if there's so much application for it now, but there almost has to be. There has to be somewhere. But well, there's still a lot of old hardware out there.
Right.
You know, right? Yeah, I've worked on CNC machines in these shops. You know, you never know what you're gonna run into. I'll tell you what, that little program, I didn't use it much, but boy, it really saved me a lot of headaches. Hey, Martin, what was the one before that he talked about, like running, like virtually running
MobiTech?
MobiTech, okay. I'll have to look at that one. I use something similar where, like, if you were going to, I think if you set up ISOs that the, a machine could boot from as a, like if you were dual booting or tri booting or something, if you had ISOs that were installed, that this thing would actually let you kind of do that in the Windows environment just to test it and see what you were in for instead of going through the whole process of rebooting. I don't remember if it was that or not, but okay. I didn't hear the name of it when you said it. So that sounds like that. It sounds like it does the same thing. I remember that being a terribly handy tool.
Yeah, I haven't heard of any of these tools.
Yeah, because I'll tell you what, I would make ISOs of like Ultimate Boot CD for Windows, and of course, once again, I mean the applications are the same, but you know, I could actually test out a lot of them in the Windows environment without having to reboot. I could test the disks and make sure everything was good. Okay, all right, great tools, man. That's a great email.
Yeah. We received another one from Joe Mesman, and this is a listener who actually lives in this area, and I've worked with him a couple times on a couple different projects. And I asked him specifically if I could read this to Geeksters, because it wasn't really sent to Geeksters, it was sent to me. But he said, I have noticed several Windows 8 computers don't assign a drive letter when you plug in an external USB hard drive. You have to go into disk management and add a drive letter. Then when you unplug the drive and then plug it back in again, you have to go through the same process. I just want a drive to automatically do that like in previous versions of Windows. I'm always plugging in drives in and out. Run this command so a drive letter is automatically assigned every time you plug in the USB drive and it becomes persistent. It says to open a command prompt as administrator, type in disk part, DISKPART, and then I'm assuming then you hit enter, and then it probably will ask you for some stuff. And then he says you set auto mount, so AUTOMOUNT to enable. I don't know. Have you guys ever had that where, I mean, I've worked on a couple Windows 8 machines, probably a dozen or so, and I've never had any issues with that.
Well, he's talking about giving it a drive letter.
Right.
I think he is right. I think I did notice that. I'm going to check it out when I go upstairs, because I've been moving stuff back and forth on my main machine I use upstairs, the old one, actually. It's got 8.1 on there. And I'll have some files on a thumb drive, and I'll put it in there. And I'm going to check it out and make sure.
I've been working with a client remotely on a Windows 8 machine, and she unplugged the hard drive, USB hard drive, plugged it back in her Windows 7 machine or Windows XP machine, excuse me. Copied data over. She unplugged it, plugged it back in her Windows 8 machine, and assigned a drive letter. And
it did assign a drive letter. Okay.
So I've never heard of it. I was curious if you guys had ever heard of it. I know you guys use or around Windows 8 a little bit more than I am.
You know what? No, this is like new to me, and I Googled it up, and ding, 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 ding. Yeah, it's a million hits. And the first one says Windows 7 is not assigned drive letter. Seems like this is a common thing. And the answer, open command prompt, type in disk part, auto mount enable. So,
So it's all one. It's all one word.
No, I kind of just said it all one word, but
oh, okay.
It's it seems like this is not uncommon. So it's new to me though.
So
yeah, I've got the same thing Tim found. I mean, I'm just looking at Google here and. Exact same thing. So, interesting.
Okay. Well,
good to know.
So, if anybody's having an issue,
the more you know.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's right. And you know what? It's not broken, it's a feature.
That's right. Well, and then if somebody does tell you that if they're having an issue, you say, I don't know, but you could go listen to Geekster Show 148.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. By the way, what's the name of what number is today's show? Okay. 148. Thank you.
You're welcome.
148.
I should know more than anybody, and I don't.
The superfecta of plot floppies.
No. I have superiority.
Sure. All right.
All right. Well, guys, I have to get moving. I have another meeting to attend to tonight, unfortunately. But so you guys, Fred, do you have anything you're working on right now that you want to talk about? I know you had kind of mentioned you're kind of starting to get back into computers and wanted to see if – is your website still up?
Yeah, I still got it up. I'm going to be changing it up, though, because I'm going to be living in I think I'm going to do a website that's more regionalized for my area that I'm going to be living in, which is going to be down in South Florida, Miami area. And so I'll have more information on that when that comes about. But now the only other thing I wanted, if anybody wants to, we have a new, I know I've said it before, but we have a little chat channel. That we a little mumble server that we talk on, and computer repair guys are in there. And if anybody wants to come in and just chat computer repair and technology and or bacon, whatever.
Ooh, I'm there. You got me.
So the details to get into it are Martin's going to put in the show notes. I'm not going to. It's too long. But just go to that. It's a wiki thingy. I think there's a link there that you can get to it from there.
Now, is this? Are you asking for computer techs to come in? Or are you asking for people that? I mean, if somebody has a computer question, they can they come in and ask a question?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
So it's kind of an open.
That's what it's all about. It's an open. It's a forum that you talk on. I enjoy them. I know a lot of people don't, but I met a lot of good friends in there, and so.
What if they want to talk about Linux?
They can do that, but I won't have much to say.
I just wasn't sure if you were an equal opportunity employer or not. I just was checking.
Linux is great if your time is worth nothing.
Or if you don't want viruses. Either one.
Or if you don't want your computer to work. Linux is great. It works great. You're going along, oh, I'm on Linux. This is cool. And suddenly you wake up one day and it says, fatal error, period. No fix.
User error.
No, I actually did have that happen. It came up. I can't remember what it said. And I emailed Dor, and he's like, I have no idea. I was like, all right, that's it. I'm done. Back to Windows we go.
Oh, well.
I'm just teasing.
No, I know. Of course.
It's but that is happen. True. That did happen.
I believe you. But I. Well, cool. Well, awesome. Well, thanks for coming out and hanging out with us, Fred. It's
I'm gonna come back. I've got about four other stories, but I know you got to run, so we'll get them next time.
Come back. All right.
I wanted to hear about the Tim Wiz gadget of the week, but I guess no time.
Do you have a gadget, Tim?
No, I don't think it's really like a gadget, and I don't even think it's like of the week. I think it's just kind of like a crappy thing that I found somewhere in a box. We kind of tease it, and Martin forgets about it, and so it goes anyway. But this week's it's a pretty little cat. It's a cat.
Oh, the cat scanner thing.
Yes, it's look at that. All right. Okay, so it's a cat, right? With an IR scanner in its nose, right? And it's got two PS2 connectors, one male, one female, and this thing would actually plug in between your keyboard and the computer. What this thing was, it's called the QCAT, C-U-E-C-A-T, the QCAT, and these companies got together in the year 2000. They pulled together $185 million to, oh gosh, it's so awful, to build these things and distribute them for free. You know, whoever wants them, you could just have one, I guess. I didn't see where they were for sale. It seems you could just have one. And what happened is that, it's funny because in some ways it was way ahead of its time, and in other ways it was just, it was stupid. But basically, I think about year 2000, you know, not like us, you know. You think about your parents, your grandparents. Well, they open up a computer, the internet was just like what the heck is it? What do you do with it? And so this was to help bridge the gap. And so if you had some article in a magazine or a can of soda with a barcode on it, you would scan it with the QCAT and it would open up a web page. And so in a lot of ways, I think that at the time it seemed really idiotic to a lot of people because they thought, well, you know, to actually be sitting there with a magazine in front of your computer scanning things, that doesn't compute. That doesn't work. People aren't going to do that. And most people didn't. But the thing was, I think it did kind of bridge that gap because it's like people who did not know what to do with the internet or how to search or what do you do? And you think at year 2000, you're using IE5. Ugh. So this thing, you know, it would just scan it, boom, it'd bring up a web page. Okay, pretty clever idea. Problem was that the every QCAT had a personal identifier. And so everything you scanned was logged to your account, and there were enormous privacy concerns at the time. So it's funny, the things that we do every day, you know, you scan the thing at the grocery store that tracks all this information to Google. There was a huge uproar of privacy concerns in all this, and so the QCAT suffered a lot of bad press for that. There was software that hacked it so that it would not send that personal identifier, so you could still look things up. There was if you had a cable connected to your, I believe it's a cable connected to the computer, and I think your television, it would listen for a tone. So certain commercials would have a tone that would then bring up a web page for the advertisement. Just all kinds of nuttiness. But it's funny because it suffered all of these very similar concerns that we either have completely given into and have taken over our lives, we think nothing of it, and seem silly now. This kind of it was a groundbreaking product that really introduced us to the future. I mean, what we live with now, what we're willing to tolerate and what we're not. There was a small breach in the security. I'm trying to think what it was. It was on their webpage, I believe, where I'm trying to remember what it was. It seemed like a pretty minor breach of security as I'm thinking back, reading through it, compared to what we see now, where hundreds of thousands of emails and passwords and all the, you know, credit information is lost, but by a laptop sitting on a subway somewhere. And one of the investors in the QCAT was Radio Shack, and so. All the people that were affected, they got, I think, a $15 coupon or something to Radio Shack. So, yeah, even that. I mean, this thing really. I found the history of the thing really interesting. Just how it kind of encountered all of these types of things first, and how they dealt with it compared to what we would expect now. You know, now it's like, well, we lost your crap. Here's a free credit report. You know. Have right. fun. Whereas this was, it seemed like a small breach in comparison, and so they actually handed out, it might as well have been, you know, cold hard cash to resolve it. So anyway, the thing died terribly, and there actually is still something of a market for these things. Now, I just found a box that came with a computer that I hauled away, but there are certain businesses that still use them as a scanner, and you know, with a small hack, you can you can scan any barcodes, and so it's pretty interesting that there is some
it's still functional.
So you can buy them on eBay. There is still some legit, not its intended purpose, but there is still some legit application for them. So anyway, that's the QCAT. It sits right next to your mouse, and it was a dismal failure, an expensive failure, but interesting in that it issued in all of these things that we decided whether we were going to tolerate or not. And I would like to point out that pretty much every list of the worst things in technology ever, it's usually on them. And I don't think that's fair. I think there's been a lot of awful stuff. And I think this was, it was the Wild West. You try things, some work and some don't. So
yeah, but it looks like a cat.
It's called the QCAT.
So that's your, that's your mouse. I mean, that's awesome.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll sell it to you.
Tim, you were talking about security concerns with that. I mean, before you know it, they're going to have TVs that can record everything you do, like Samsung smart TVs. That would never happen.
No.
Maybe we can talk about that next week. So.
Ooh.
There's a story about that. Yeah. Good show.
Pretty cool, Tim.
Good show.
But Tim wins.
No, not at all. It's just the Tim crap stuff on the shelf thingy.
That's a great title.
Think of something for next week.
I'm still working on it. Well, I've got tons of stuff. So
if people want to get a hold of you, and maybe they've got their own crap on a shelf that they want to share.
I'm Tim Bauermeister on the Google Plus. You can make arrangements with me to ship your own crappy thing to me that we can then share with others and learn. Tim Bauermeister on the G Plus. Am I selling it? Sell it? Did I really sell it?
That's the sizzle right there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The sizzle.
Mitch, if you want to get a hold of us, send us an email, voicemail. What's the best way?
Geeksters@podnuts.com and send us a voicemail. We want your voicemails. Gary, send us a voicemail at 707-6-PODNUT, 707-676-3688. We love voicemails.
You know, Mitch is serious if he calls you out by name.
Yeah,
we're just gonna. That's the new plan. We're gonna call somebody out in the chat room by name.
Yeah, Al, send anybody, Dave, Al, send us a voicemail.
We're talking to you right there. You right there in the chat room. You send us a voicemail. All right, my name is Martin. You can find me at MObando in the Google Plus, Obando Computing on the Hangouts, Martin at Obando Computing. I'm all over the place. Just send us a line. Hey, Fred, we never asked you how people. Do you want people to get a hold of you, or are you gonna hide down in Florida?
Nobody wants to get a hold of me.
It's not true. Not true.
Why would they want to get a hold of a friend of Ched?
I don't know. Maybe there's somebody out there who's got sticky stuff.
Fred would be on the upper bunk.
Now you can get me at Fred Gaines on Google Plus. Or the best way is to get into the Mumble server there.
There you go.
I'm there every afternoon. Well, pretty much every afternoon, and Mitch is there occasionally.
The sizzle.
The sizzle.
Sell it. All right, guys.
The sizzle.
Have a great fiscal week. Don't forget to do Windows updates, and don't forget to be gruntled. We'll talk to you guys later. Bye.